Welcome back to the Hemingway List. Sorry, I'm just placing my handheld microphone on the table. Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway, episode 101. Oh my dear. Today we will be discussing book 4, chapter 4 of The Brothers Karamazov, and then we'll be reading chapter 5. The questions that I asked you guys... Sorry, I'm talking like a weirdo. The questions that I asked you guys are fine. Why you do that? Do the thing where you don't make noise. Done. Cool. Sorry. The questions that I asked you guys about chapter 4, book 4, chapter 4 were these. Lisa is shy. It's kind of cute. They seem to hold out hope Lisa will be cured and be able to walk. Is that at all possible? What illness might she have? And who was Holokov referring to in the last paragraph about a woman loving both of Alyosha's brothers? Tech-rific said, cute. I don't see it. I can't help but being creeped out by Lisa. She's just creepy and manipulative. Am I the only one feeling this? Stay far away, Alyosha. Lisa is just the type Alyosha would go for. Why is that? Something to fix? Savior complex in action? I feel only dread thinking about their future. I Am Norwegian said, I thought it seemed very cute and sincere. This chapter doesn't paint her in entirely the same light, so I can't be sure. I think Lisa fell in love with Alyosha a long time ago when Alyosha sees her as something like a message from God. He received her letter the same day he was told to find a wife. Her disease being psychosomatic is an interesting theory. I hadn't even considered it. Oh, this is in response to another thing that Tekrific said. Sorry, I've gotten ahead of myself. So, hold that thought. Let's go back to this thing about, is Lisa sincere and cute or not? Because I thought it was quite cute. I thought she'd written that letter and it had taken her a lot of bravery to have that letter delivered to her love. And then, but she was so kind of like scared that he wouldn't reciprocate that she was like, oh, you know, how did you find my joke? Did you like my joke? And she was all awkward about it. And I thought that was kind of cute how awkward she was. No, Tekrific saw it as more manipulative and creepy. So it's interesting. Very different takes. Tekrific also said, regarding what her illness might be, I have no idea. Psychosomatic would be my guess, since she oscillates between being cured and ill again. I think she would need a psychologist, not a priest, or that snake oil excuse of a German doctor. Psychosomatic means an illness or other condition caused or aggravated by a mental factor such as internal conflict or stress. Interesting. You can't be incapable of walking from stress, though, can you? Because if so, I should probably get myself a wheelchair. The third question I asked was, what was it? Who was Holokov referring to in the last paragraph about a woman loving both of Alyosha's brothers? And Tekrific said, it seems like Katerina Ivanovna has hopes on both Ivan and Dmitri. Come to think of it, she feels creepy too. Maybe I'm just in a weird mood. Yeah, maybe your creepy radar is a bit sensitive at the moment, Tech. So far, Madame Kholoklov, is that how it's said? Kholoklov, is the only woman beside Grigory's wife, what's her name, that I feel sympathy for. The widow, Kholokov, is quite funny too. She deals with her daughter's manipulations with good-natured humour. I kind of like her in this chapter. So I Am Norwegian was responding to Tekrific's comments and said, her disease being psychosomatic is an interesting theory that I hadn't considered, though I think her hysterics mentioned in this chapter might be nothing more than a teen girl freaking out that the boy she likes is coming over, combined with a rough night of sleep. I don't think Katerina Ivanovna feels creepy, but there's definitely something bizarre about her. Tekrific agreed. Yeah, fair enough. Bizarre is a better word for her. Doop-de-doop. Swim, said the mummer fish. She said, I don't know. I've been dealing with a family emergency the last 2 weeks and it is still ongoing. Real life family drama juxtaposed with fictional drama. And then there was over-the-top drama in Wuthering Heights and the depressing drama in The Dubliners. Stephen Crane seemed pretty straightforward, except that people did die. My overall reaction, oh, for crying out loud, what now? Lisa is spoiled and acts entitled. She needs a set down. Interesting. See, Lisa being spoiled and entitled, I just kind of felt sorry for her. You know, she's got this whatever mystery affliction she's got, and she's... good on her for, like, declaring her love for her crush, and now she's all awkward about it, and I don't know, I kind of liked her in this chapter. Even though she was backpedaling very, very rapidly, trying to, like, be like, oh, it was just a joke, you know. And she even got a bit defensive about it, but I just saw that as her, like, just being a kid, pretty much. About the family drama. Not cool, Swim said the Mummerfish. I'm sorry to hear you've got a family emergency happening. I commented to you before, I'll read the comment. It said, as my grandma always says to comfort us in tough times, keep your pecker up. And she doesn't know why everyone in the family finds that hilarious. She claims that pecker means your nose, so it's like saying keep your chin up. Keep your pecker up. Ah, Nan, she's the best. I am Norwegian said, what did Lisa mean when she said that everyone is laughing at Alyosha? Yeah, that's a good question. Laura Weistich said, I thought she said that she was joking because she was worried Alyosha didn't feel the same way, and if she was joking, she doesn't need to feel embarrassed. Oh, and that's why everyone's laughing at Alyosha. Yeah, that makes sense. Question one, Lisa is shy. It's kind of cute. I am Norwegian said, I think so. The ha-ha, I was only joking defense is a hallmark of the awkward young love. But she is really very capricious, so it can be difficult knowing where she's coming from. Though after a night without sleep from fever, some irritability seems excusable. Question two, do you think she'll be cured and what might her disease be? Well, a young person in a wheelchair is an older story. In an older story, immediately leads me to assume polio, but I have no idea. She did walk in front of Zossima, even if it was for a bit, so it seems improvement is possible. Question three, who was Holokov referring to in the last paragraph? Katerina Ivanovna. Dirt Burglar said, I wonder if Madame Holokov is mistaken here. If Katerina really does love Ivan, then there's no real conflict for those two characters, and they drop out of this whole love tangle. Seems like the book needs that conflict, so I'm thinking there must be more than meets the eye. The alternative is that the conflict in Katerina's internal conflict is trying to convince herself of her own love for Mitya. Somostar said, part of the fun challenges of this book is unpacking people's perspectives and how they are often incorrect, but believe full on that they are right. Dmitri thinks he is owed more money than he really is. Rakitin thinks Dmitri will kill Fyodor. Katerina initially thought Grishenko was an angel. Madame Holokov may yet be another character who believes the wrong thing, only time will tell. A little hint there maybe from Soma Stars, who I think has read the book before? I'm not sure. That's it for the conversation. Hey, I wanted to tell you guys something, which really made my day today. I'm going to share this with y'all, if I can find it. So I was at Supernova again today with young Aaron. Yesterday, a girl came up to me and asked for my autograph. And she was like really excited to meet me and said my book, A Duet for Swans, was one of her favorites and that, you know, she loved my books. And, you know, I said, oh, come on, get a photo with me and everything. And that was just really cool, really nice. And then she asked for an autograph, but I didn't really have anything to sign. And she already had my books, so I just grabbed like a flyer, like a little brochure thing off my table, and I wrote a little note and I signed it, but it wasn't like very special. And I gave it to her. She was really happy with that. Anyway, afterwards, I'm like, oh man, she was so nice. And like, it was such a nice thing to meet someone who really appreciated my books and was excited to meet me, and I was like, I wish I had something better to sign for her. And then I was saying to Aaron, he was like, oh man, that was really cool. And I'm like, yeah, that kind of made my day. And I'm like, oh, that made me excited to write like the next book in A Duet for Swans, like, because that's book one, and I haven't written book two yet. And like, she wondered when it was coming out and stuff. So anyway, the next day, which was today, she walked past again. And today, being a massive wanker, I decided to take my typewriter along for the day and do a bit of writing. Yes, I'm a massive hipster, apparently. I can't really deny that if I'm the kind of guy that sits around with a typewriter in public. Anyway, Aaron wanted to use the laptop to do some writing today while we were at the convention. And I thought, yeah, you know, that's a good idea. I'll take the typewriter and I'll do some too. Anyway, she walked past and I kind of went, oh, hey. And I remembered her name. I won't say her name, but I remembered it. And she was really happy that I remembered it. And I said, hey, why don't you come back in 5 minutes and I'll give you something. And she said, okay. So she did. And I typed up on my typewriter a little like thank you note to her and saying like, thanks for coming over yesterday. And it was really nice to meet you. And meeting you made me really inspired to write the next book in A Duet for Swans. And, you know, I told her what that book's title is and, you know, like a little inside scoop for her. Said, oh, sorry, I didn't have something good to sign. I hope you like this letter. And then, you know, I signed it and then she came back and I gave it to her and she was really happy. That kind of made my day. But then even more so, and this is just one of the best things that's happened to me in a long time. I got home and found this message on my Facebook. I'll read it to you now. It was from her mum. Her mum was there yesterday, but not there today. I don't think, I at least didn't see her. Anyway, it says this. Hi, Ander. You met my daughter at Supernova on Saturday and again today, and I just wanted to say an enormous thank you for, firstly, remembering her today, and secondly, for typing her the special note. It made her day. What you don't know is Kayla has a disability called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Among other things, it causes chronic pain and daily joint dislocations, which are incredibly debilitating and also painful. It also affects her heart, her eyes, her stomach, and, well, pretty much all of her, as it is her connective tissue that is faulty. So, anyway, she first came across your books when she was in hospital, with a stomach issue caused by EDS, and she was unable to eat or drink a few years ago. We bought a few different books and activities, but it wasn't until she read your book, A Duet for Swans, that she actually cheered up and began to see life a little differently. She then wanted any book you wrote and reads them over and over. She is a serious bookworm and quite a critic, but you have stayed at the top of her list for some years now. So, to have you remember her today really made her day. She has come home and put your letter in a frame on her bookshelf. The mentioning of writing part two of A Duet for Swans was another thrill for her, as that is the book that, for whatever reason, changed her mindset. So I wanted to take the time to say thank you. Your books and your time today and yesterday have made my daughter's day and probably her year. She has already started to plan how she is going to talk to the principal of her school about the program that you run. Thank you again. So I came home and found that message in my my Facebook messages. I don't know, like, the weekend was kind of slow in terms of sales, and we were a little disappointed about, like, you know, we didn't sell that many books. We sold some, but, like, certainly was on the lower end. But now it's like, oh, definitely worth it. Like, I'm just so glad we went and that experience and to meet someone like that. And then, I don't know, like, I went on that little extra mile and typed out that letter just kind of on a whim. Like, oh, she seems like a good kid. I had no idea about her illness or anything like that. She just seemed like a normal teenager to me. And then when I got home and read that message, I was just so, like, I don't know. I felt, I suppose, proud of myself and happy for that girl. So, no, I just thought I'd share that with you. Also, the thing is with A Duet for Swans, I wrote that at a time when I was really, really anxious about something that was happening in my life at the time. And I could not escape this worry, this anxiety that I was feeling about my situation. This was many years ago. This was in 2012. Anyway, so I was very, very, I was like beside myself with anxiety about this thing. And usually if I'm feeling worried or stressed or whatever, I would use books or a good movie or something like that and get sucked into that world. And that's my escapism. And temporarily I can forget whatever's sort of plaguing me. But I was finding at this point I was so anxious that that wasn't working. Nothing was helping me get out of my head. I couldn't find the escapism. So I wrote A Duet for Swans 1 to be pure escapism. It was basically like I wrote it at that time because it's like the escapism I craved didn't exist, so I created it in its place there and then. And so I used the creation of that book to get out of my own personal world that I couldn't really stand at that time. So anyway, I wrote that in the hopes that I wrote it for that purpose for myself, and thinking, well, hopefully it will serve that purpose for other people, and other people that are having a hard time with whatever's going on in their life and can't seem to escape those dark thoughts or troubling moments or whatever, might be able to get some respite from their troubles by reading my book. And that was the hope, and that was in 2012. And that book was released in 2014. And I don't know when this young lady got my book, first of all, but I don't think it was terribly recently. I think it must have been a few years ago. And I don't know, all these years later, I found out that it kind of achieved the purpose that I wanted it to, at least for one person. So, yeah, I don't know, that just gave me such a kick. So, I don't know, I thought I'd share that with you guys. It's the best thing that's happened to me in a while, so there you go. Now, enough about me. Let's move on. Let's read some more Dostoevsky. This is book 4, chapter 5. A Laceration in the Drawing Room. But in the drawing room, the conversation was already over. Katerina Ivanovna was greatly excited, though she looked resolute. At the moment, Alyosha and Madame Holokov entered. Ivan Fyodorovich stood up to take leave. His face was rather pale, and Alyosha looked at him anxiously. For this moment was to solve a doubt, a harassing enigma, which had for some time haunted Alyosha. During the preceding month, it had been several times suggested to him that his brother Ivan was in love with Katerina Ivanovna, and that was more, what was more, that he meant to carry her off from Dmitri, until quite lately the idea seemed to Alyosha monstrous, though it worried him extremely. He loved both his brothers, and dreaded such rivalry between them. Meantime, Dmitri had said outright on the previous day that he was glad that Ivan was his rival, and that it was a great assistance to him, Dmitri. In what way did it assist him? To marry Grushenka? But that Alyosha considered the worst thing possible. Besides all this, Alyosha had, till the evening before, implicitly believed that Katerina Ivanovna had a steadfast and passionate love for Dmitri. But he had only believed it till the evening before. He had fancied, too, that she was incapable of loving a man like Ivan, and that she did love Dmitri, and loved him just as he was, in spite of all the strangeness of such a passion. But, during yesterday's scene with Grushenka, another idea had struck him. The word, lacerating, which Madame Holokov had just uttered, almost made him start, because, half waking up towards daybreak that night, he had cried out, "Laceration, laceration," probably applying it to his dream. He had been dreaming all night of the previous day's scene at Katerina Ivanovna's. Now Alyosha was impressed by Madame Holokov's blunt and persistent assertion that Katerina Ivanovna was in love with Ivan, and only deceived herself through some sort of pose from self-laceration, and tortured herself by her pretended love for Dmitri for some fancied duty of gratitude. Yes, he thought, perhaps the whole truth lies in those words. But in that case, what was Ivan's position? Alyosha felt instinctively that a character like Katerina Ivanovna's must dominate. and she could only dominate someone like Dmitri, and never a man like Ivan, for Dmitri might at last submit to her domination, to his own happiness, which was what Alyosha would have desired. But Ivan could not submit to her, and such submission would not give him happiness. Alyosha could not help believing that of Ivan. And now all these doubts and reflections flitted through his mind as he entered the drawing room. Another idea, too, forced itself upon him. What if she loved neither of them, neither Ivan or Dmitri? It must be noted that Alyosha felt as if it were ashamed of his own thoughts and blamed himself when they kept recurring to him during the last month. What did I know about love and women, and how can I decide such questions? He thought reproachfully after such doubts and surmises, and yet it was impossible not to think about it. He felt instinctively that this rivalry was of immense importance in his brothers' lives, and that a great deal depended on it. One reptile will devour the other, Ivan had pronounced the day before, speaking in anger of his father and Dmitri. So Ivan looked upon Dmitri as a reptile, and perhaps had long done so. Was it perhaps since he had known Katerina Ivanovna? That phrase had, of course, escaped Ivan unawares yesterday, but that only made it more important. If he felt like that, what chance was there of peace? Were there not, on the contrary, new grounds for hatred and hostility in their family? And with which of them was Alyosha to sympathize? And what was he to wish for of each of them? He loved them both, but what could he desire for each in the midst of these conflicting interests? He might go quite astray in this maze, and Alyosha's heart could not endure uncertainty, because his love was always of an active character. He was incapable of passive love. If he loved anyone, he set to work at once to help him, and to do so he must know what he was aiming at. He must know for certain what was best for each, and having ascertained this, it was natural for him to help them both. But instead of a definite aim, he found nothing but uncertainty and perplexity on all sides. It was lacerating, as it was said just now, but what could he understand even in his laceration? He did not understand the first word in this perplexing maze. Seeing Alyosha, Katerina Ivanovna said quickly and joyfully that to Ivan, who had already got up to go, "A minute, stay another minute. I want to hear the opinion of this person here, whom I trust absolutely. Don't go away," she added, addressing Madame Holikov. She made Alyosha sit down beside her, and Madame Holikov sat opposite by Ivan. "You are all my friends here. All I have in the world, dear friends," she warmly, in a voice which quivered with genuine tears of suffering, and Alyosha's heart warmed to her at once. "You, Alexei Fyodorovitch, were witness yesterday of that abominable scene, and saw what I did. You did not see it, Ivan Fyodorovitch, he did. What he thought of me yesterday, I don't know. I only know one thing, that if it were repeated today, this minute, I should express the same feelings again as yesterday. The same feelings, the same words, the same actions. You remember my actions, Alexei Fyodorovitch? You checked me in one of them." As she said that, she flushed and her eyes shone. "I must tell you that I can't get over it. Listen, Alexei Fyodorovitch, I don't even know whether I still love him. I feel pity for him, and that is a poor sign of love. If I loved him, if I still loved him, perhaps I shouldn't be sorry for him now, but should hate him." Her voice quivered and tears glittered on her eyelashes. Alyosha shuddered inwardly. That girl is truthful and sincere, he thought, and she does not love Dmitri any more. That's true, cried Madame Holikov. "Wait, dear, I haven't told you the final decision I came to during the night. I feel that perhaps my decision is a terrible one for me, but I foresee that nothing will induce me to change it, nothing. It will be so all my life. My dear, kind, ever faithful, generous adviser, the one friend I have in the world, Ivan Fyodorovitch, with his deep insight into the heart, approves and commends my decision. He knows it." "Yes, I approve of it," Ivan assented, in a subdued but firm voice. "But I should like Alyosha too. Ah, Alexei Fyodorovitch, forgive my calling you simply Alyosha. I should like Alexei Fyodorovitch too, to tell me before my two friends whether I am right. I feel instinctively that you, Alyosha, my dear brother, for are a dear brother to me, she said again ecstatically. A lot of typos in this chapter. I'm just kind of correcting them as I go. For you are a dear brother to me, she said again ecstatically, taking his cold hand in her hot one. I foresee that your decision, your approval, will bring me peace in spite of all my sufferings, for after your words I shall be calm and submit. I feel that. I don't know what you are asking me, said Alyosha, flushing. I only know that I love you and at this moment wish for your happiness more than my own. But I know nothing about such affairs, something impelled him to add hurriedly. In such affairs, Alexei Fyodorovitch, in such affairs the chief thing is honour and duty and something higher. I don't know what, but higher perhaps even than duty. I am conscious of this irresistible feeling in my heart, and it compels me irresistibly, but it may all be put in two words. I've already decided, even if he marries that creature, she began solemnly, whom I never, never can forgive, even then I will not abandon him. Henceforward I will never, never abandon him, she cried, breaking into a sort of pale, hysterical ecstasy. Not that I would run after him continually, get in his way and worry him, oh no, I will go away to another town, where you like, but I will watch over him for all my life. I will watch over him all my life unceasingly. When he becomes unhappy with that woman, and that is bound to happen quite soon, let him come to me and he will find a friend, a sister, only a sister, of course, and so forever, but he will learn at least that that sister is really his sister, who loves him, who has sacrificed all her life to him. I will gain my point. I will insist on knowing me, confiding entirely in me, without reserve, she cried in a sort of frenzy. I will be a god to whom he can pray, and that at least he owes me for this treachery and for what I have suffered yesterday through him. And let him see that all my life I will be true to him and the promise I gave him, in spite of being untrue and betraying me. I will become nothing but a means for his happiness, or, how shall I say, an instrument, a machine for his happiness. And that's my whole life, and that he may see that all his life. That's my decision. Ivan Fyodorovitch fully approves me. She was breathless. She had perhaps intended to express her idea with more dignity, art, and naturalness, but her speech was too hurried and crude. It was full of youthful impulsiveness. It betrayed that she was still smarting from yesterday's insult and that her pride craved satisfaction. She felt this herself. Her face suddenly darkened. An unpleasant look came into her eyes. Alyosha at once saw it and felt a pang of sympathy. His brother Ivan made it worse by adding, I've only expressed my own view, he said. From anyone else, this would have been affected and overstrained, but from you, no. Any other woman would have been wrong, but you are right. I don't know how to explain it, but I see that you are absolutely genuine, and therefore you are right. But that's not only for the moment. And what does this moment stand for? Nothing but yesterday's insult. Madame Holokov obviously had no intent to interfere, but she could not refrain from this very just comment. Quite so, cried Ivan, with peculiar eagerness, obviously annoyed at being interrupted. In anyone else this moment would be only due to yesterday's impression and would be only a moment, but with Katerina Ivanovna's character, that moment will last all her life. What for anyone else would be only a promise is for her an everlasting, burdensome, grim, perhaps but unflagging duty, and she will be sustained by the feeling of this duty being fulfilled. Your life, Katerina Ivanovna, will henceforth be spent in painful brooding over your own feelings, your own heroism, and your own suffering, but in the end, the suffering will be softened and will pass into sweet contemplation of the fulfilment of a bold and proud design. Yes, proud it certainly is, and desperate in any case, but a triumph for you. And the consciousness of it will at last be a source of complete satisfaction, and will make you resigned to everything else. This was unmistakably said with some malice and obviously with intention, even perhaps with no desire to conceal that he spoke ironically and with intention. Oh dear, how mistaken it all is, Madame Hohlakov cried again. Alexei Fyodorovitch, you speak. I want dreadfully to know what you will say, cried Katerina Ivanovna and burst into tears. Alyosha got up from the sofa. It's nothing, nothing, she went on through her tears. I'm upset I didn't sleep last night, but by the side of two such friends as you and your brother, I still feel strong, for I know you two will never desert me. Unluckily, I am obliged to return to Moscow, perhaps tomorrow, and to leave you for a long time, and unluckily, it's unavoidable, Ivan said suddenly. Tomorrow, to Moscow, her face was suddenly contorted. But dear me, how fortunate, she cried in a voice suddenly changed. What's with these characters, like everything's like crying and suddenly contorting their faces and, you know, bursting into tears and sitting up and standing, jumping here, and it's like, they're very animated, these people. Tomorrow, to Moscow, her face was suddenly contorted. But dear me, how fortunate, she cried, and her voice suddenly changed. In one instant there was no trace left of her tears. She underwent an instantaneous transformation which amazed Alyosha. Instead of a poor, insulted girl weeping in a sort of laceration, he saw a woman completely self-possessed and even exceedingly pleased, as though something agreeable had just happened. Oh, not fortunate that I am losing you, of course, she collected herself suddenly with a charming society smile. Such a friend as you could not suppose that. I am only too unhappy at losing you. She rushed impulsively at Ivan, and seizing both of his hands, pressed them warmly. But what is fortunate is that you will be in Moscow to see Auntie and Agafya, and to tell them all the horror of my present position. You can speak with complete openness to Agafya, but spare, dear Auntie. You will know how to do that. You can't think how wretched I was yesterday and this morning, wondering how I could write them that dreadful letter, for one can never tell such things in a letter. Now it will be easier for me to write, for you will see them and explain everything. Oh, how glad I am, but I am only glad of that because, believe me, of course no one can take your place. I will run at once to write the letter, she finished suddenly, and took a step as though to go out of the room. And what about Alyosha and his opinion, which you were so desperately anxious to hear, cried Madame Hohlakov. There was a sarcastic, angry note in her voice. I had not forgotten that, cried Katerina Ivanovna, coming to a sudden standstill. And why are you so antagonistic at such a moment, she added, with a warm and bitter reproachfulness. What I said, I repeat, I must have his opinion. More than that, I must have his decision. As he says, so it shall be. You see how anxious I am for your words, Alexei Fyodorovitch, but what's the matter? I couldn't have believed it. I can't understand it, Alyosha cried, suddenly in distress. He is going to Moscow, and you cry out that you are glad. You said that on purpose. And you begin explaining that you are not glad of that, but sorry to be losing a friend. But that was acting, too. You are playing a part as in a theatre. In a theatre? What do you mean? Exclaimed Katerina Ivanovna, profoundly astonished, flushing crimson and frowning all at the same time. Though you assure him you are sorry to lose a friend in him, you persist in telling him to his face that it's fortunate he is going, said Alyosha breathlessly. He was standing at the table and did not sit down. What are you talking about? I don't understand. I don't understand myself. I seemed to see in a flash. I know I am not saying it properly, but I will say it all the same, Alyosha went on in the same shaking and broken voice. What I see is that perhaps you don't love Dmitri at all, and never have from the beginning, and Dmitri too has never loved you, and only esteems you. I really don't know how I dare to say all this, but somebody must tell the truth, for nobody here will tell the truth. What truth? Cried Katerina Ivanovna, and there was an hysterical ring in her voice. I'll tell you, Alyosha went on with desperate haste, as though he were jumping from the top of a house. Call Dmitri, I will fetch him, and let him come here and take your hand, and take Ivan's and join your hands, for you are torturing Ivan, simply because you love him, and torturing him because you love Dmitri, those self-laceration with an unreal love because you've persuaded yourself. Alyosha broke off and was silent. You are a little religious idiot. That's what you are, Katerina Ivanovna snapped. Her face was white and her lips were moving with anger. Ivan suddenly laughed and got up. His hat was in his hand. You are mistaken, my good Alyosha, he said, with an expression Alyosha had never seen in his face before, an expression of youthful sincerity and strong, irresistible, frank feelings. Katerina Ivanovna has never cared for me. She has known all the time that I cared for her, though I never said a word of love to her. She knew, but she didn't care for me. I have never been her friend either, not for one moment. She is too proud to need my friendship. She kept me at her side as a means of revenge. She revenged with me and on me all the insults which she had been continually receiving from Dmitri ever since their first meeting. For even that first meeting has rankled in her heart as an insult. That's what her heart is like. She has talked to me of nothing but her love for him. I am going now, but believe me, Katerina Ivanovna, you really love him. And the more he insults you, the more you love him. That's your laceration. You love him just as he is. You love him for insulting you. If he reformed, you'd give him up at once and cease to love him. But you need him so as to contemplate continually your heroic fidelity and to reproach him for infidelity. And it all comes from your pride. Oh, there's a great deal of humiliation and self-abasement about it, but it all comes from pride. I am too young, and I've loved you too much. I know that I ought not to say this, that it would be more dignified on my part simply to leave you, and it would be less offensive for you, but I am going far away and shall never come back. It is forever. I don't want to sit beside a laceration, but I don't know how to speak now. I've said everything. Goodbye, Katerina Ivanovna. You can't be angry with me, for I am 100 times more severely punished than you, if only by the fact that I shall never see you again. Goodbye. I don't want your hand. You've tortured me too deliberately for me to be able to forgive you at this moment. I shall forgive you later, but now I don't want your hand. Den dank, dame, berchir ich nicht. Thank you, madame, I want nothing, he added with a forced smile, showing, however, that he could read Schiller and read him till he knew him by heart, which Alyosha would never have believed. He went out of the room without saying goodbye even to his hostess, Madame Holokov. Alyosha clasped his hands. Ivan, he cried desperately after him. Come back, Ivan. No, nothing will induce him to come back now, he cried again, regretfully realizing it. But it's my fault, my fault. I began it. Ivan spoke angrily, wrongly, unjustly and angrily. He must come back here, come back, Alyosha kept exclaiming frantically. Katerina Ivanovna went suddenly into the next room. You have done no harm. You behaved beautifully like an angel, Madame Holokov whispered rapidly and ecstatically to Alyosha. I will do my utmost to prevent Ivan Fyodorovitch from going. Her face beamed with delight, to the great distress of Alyosha, but Katerina Ivanovna suddenly returned. She had 200 ruble notes in her hand. I have a great favour to ask you, Alex A. Fyodorovitch, she began, addressing Alyosha with an apparently calm and even voice, as though nothing had happened. A week, yes, I think it was a week ago, Dmitri Fyodorovitch was guilty of a hasty and unjust action, a very ugly action. There is a low tavern here, and in it he met that discharged officer, that captain, whom your father used to employ in some business. Dmitri Fyodorovitch somehow lost his temper with this captain, seized him by the beard and dragged him out into the street, and for some distance along it, in that insulting fashion. And I am told that his son, a boy, quite a child, who was at the school here, saw it and ran beside them crying and begging for his father, appealing to everyone to defend him, while everyone laughed. You must forgive me, Alexei Fyodorovitch. I cannot think without indignation of that disgraceful action of his, one of those actions of which only Dmitri Fyodorovitch would be capable of in his anger and in his passions. I can't describe it even. I can't find my words. I have made inquiries about his victim and find he is quite a poor man. His name is Snegoryov. Snegoryov? He did something wrong in the army and was discharged. I can't tell you what. and now he has sunk into terrible destitution with his family, an unhappy family of sick children and, I believe, an insane wife. He had been living here a long time. He used to work as a copying clerk, but now he is getting nothing. I'm so confused. You see, I wanted to ask you, my dear Alexei Fyodorovich, to go to him, to find some excuse to go to them. I mean, to that captain. Oh, goodness, how badly I explained it, and delicately, carefully, only you know how to, Alyosha blushed, manage to give him this assistance, these 200 rubles. He will be sure to take it. I mean, persuade him to take it. Or rather, what do I mean? You see, it's not by a way of compensation to prevent him from taking proceedings, for I believe he meant to, but simply a token of sympathy, of a desire to assist him from me, Dmitri Fyodorovich, his betrothed, not from himself. But, you know, I would go myself, but you'll know how to do it ever so much better. He lives in Lake Street in a house of a woman called Kalimakov. For God's sake, Alexei Fyodorovich, do it for me, and now I am rather tired. Goodbye. She turned and disappeared behind the portiere so quickly that Alyosha had not time to utter a word, though he wanted to speak. He longed to beg her pardon, to blame himself, to say something, for his heart was full and he could not bear to go out of the room without it. But Madame Holokov took him by the hand and drew him along with her. In the hall she stopped him again, as before. She is proud, she is struggling with herself, but kind, charming, generous, she exclaimed in half a whisper. Oh, how I love her. Especially sometimes, and how glad I am again of everything. Dear Alexei Fyodorovich, you didn't know, but I must tell you that we are all, both her aunts and I, all of us, Lisa even, have been hoping and praying for nothing for the last month, but that she may give up your favourite Dmitri, who takes no notice of her and does not care for her, and may marry Ivan. Such an excellent and cultivated young man who loves her for more than anything in the world. We are in a regular plot to bring him in about, and I am even staying on here perhaps on that account. But she has been crying. She has been wounded again, cried Alyosha. Never trust a woman's tears, Alexei. I am never for the woman in such cases. I am always on the side of the men. Mama, you are spoiling him, Lisa's little voice cried from behind the door. No, it was all my fault. I am horribly to blame, Alyosha repeated unconsoled, hiding his face in his hands in the agony of remorse for his indiscretion. Quite the contrary, you behaved like an angel, like an angel. I am ready to say so 1,000 times over. Oh, yeah, I believe it. Like an angel, like an angel, like an angel. Mama, how has he behaved like an angel? Lisa's voice was heard again. I somehow fancied all at once, Alyosha went on, as though he had not heard Lisa, that she loved Ivan, and so I said that stupid thing. What will happen now? To whom? Cried Lisa. Mama, you really want to be the death of me? I ask you, and you don't answer. At the moment, the maid ran in. Katerina Ivanovna is ill. She is crying, struggling, hysterics. What is the matter? Cried Lisa in a tone of real anxiety. Mama, I shall be having hysterics, and not she. Lisa, for mercy's sake, don't scream. Don't persecute me. At your age, one can't know everything that grown-up people know. I will come and tell you everything you ought to know. Oh, mercy, on us. I am coming. Hysterics is a good sign, Alexei Fyodorovich. It's an excellent thing that she is hysterical. That's just as it ought to be. In such cases, I am always against the woman, against all these families, tears and hysterics. Run away. Run and say, Yulia, that I'll fly to her. As for Ivan Fyodorovich's going away like that, it's her own fault. But he won't go away. Lisa's, for mercy's sake, don't scream. Oh, yes, you are not screaming. It's I am screaming. Forgive your mamma. But I am delighted. Did you notice, Alexei Fyodorovich, how young Ivan Fyodorovich was just now when he went out, when he said all that he went out? I thought he was so learned, such a savant, and all of a sudden he behaved so warmly, openly, and youthfully, and such a youthful experience, and it was all so fine, like you. And the way he repeated the German verse, it was just like you. But I must fly, Alexei Fyodorovich. Make haste to carry out her commission, and then make haste back. Lisa, do you want anything now? For mercy's sake, don't keep Alexei Fyodorovich a minute. He will come back to you at once. Madame Holokov at last ran off before leaving. Alyosha would have opened the door to see Liza. On no account, cried Liza. On no account now. Speak through the door. How have you come to be an angel? That's the only thing I want to know. For an awful piece of stupidity, Liza. Goodbye. Don't dare to go away like that, Liza was beginning. Liza, I have a real sorrow. I'll be back directly, but I have a great, great sorrow. And he ran out of the room. He ran out of the room. All right, there we go. Another chapter down. Book 4, chapter 5. Maybe one of the worst bits of prose I have ever read. It is sloppy. It is clunky. It is repetitive. It is tautological to the, like, just so much in, like, unnecessary words. So many unnecessary words in that. I'm not just talking about, like, the fact that he would repeat the same sentence two times in a row, every second sentence, or the fact that he would repeat words two, three, four times straight after each other. But even just, like, there's just tautological, like, it would be like, how dare you, Alexei Fyodorovich, she said to Alexei. And it's like, we know who she's talking to because she said the name of the person she's addressing in the dialogue. You don't need to then tell us who she's talking to. Like, it is so amateurish writing, the prose. I mean, the characters are great. I love the characters. There's depth in the characters. But their dialogue is, it's the worst dialogue I've ever read. I think it's the worst dialogue I've ever read in a novel. And then the prose between the dialogue is equally clunky and unnecessary and tautological and sloppy. It is sloppy. It's like a first draft, and it's like it was recorded on a dictaphone. Like, he didn't actually type it up and consider what he was typing. It was just like he just spoke it into a microphone and then someone transcribed it onto paper. It is painful to read, I gotta say. Now, that was a long chapter. It was 9 pages of if I was writing what happened in that chapter in my own prose, it would be maybe 3 pages, and it would be more detailed than that. What am I saying? What was I saying? Yeah, it's long and tedious. Anyway, enough of me complaining. Have your say about the chapter. reddit.com/r/TheHemingwayList. I look forward to seeing what you've got to say all about it. Thank you for listening today. I'll see you tomorrow.